Hello and welcome once again, podcasters, to this series of podcasts brought to you by Kilkenny Library Services in partnership with Kilkenny County Council and the Government's Decade of Centenaries Fund. My name is Owen Swinton Welsh, and in these podcasts, we focus on revolutionary era Kilkenny. Now, a lot of things were happening right across the country by June 1921 during these final hectic weeks of the Irish War of Independence. On the military side of things, the IRA were pushing back against the Crown forces who had gained a foothold earlier in the year. Now, however, the IRA units around the country were fighting back. Even the RIC report from County Kilkenny to Dublin Castle at this time noted that the number of what they termed outrages had increased dramatically, doubling in number between April to May 1921 alone. That was 33 reports of crimes or outrages in April, which jumped to 69 in May. The majority of these were what the RIC referred to as politically motivated outrages. In other words, it was because of the ongoing War of Independence. The RIC County Inspector D.I. Weiss commenced his report in June 1921 by stating, "I beg to report that the condition of this county has very much deteriorated during the month." He went on to say that rebels have been daringly active, end quote. June 1921 also witnessed the first killing of an auxiliary from Woodstock House in Inisteig. Indeed, the man in question, Leonard French, was the only member of the Woodstock auxiliaries to lose his life in the line of duty during the War of Independence in Kilkenny. This occurred near the Roar in the southeast of County Kilkenny. The Roar is about 8 kilometres north from New Ross Town in County Wexford. That's about 5 miles in Old Money. The Roar incident is probably one of the least documented events of the War of Independence in Kilkenny, which makes it hard for historians to definitively state what happened. There was a number of reasons for this. The death of Auxiliary Cadet French was not pre-planned, unlike some of the other big set-piece ambushes that occurred in County Kilkenny. Only a handful of astute IRA men were involved. They had used their own initiative. There is even a gap in official papers from the Crown Forces side. The one thing the British administration excelled at was generating paperwork. Other wings of the Crown Forces like the Army, the RIC and the Black and Tans left a decent amount of records and reports behind, but this was not the case with the auxiliaries. It is said that much of their records were purposely destroyed when they were disbanded in 1922, likely so there would be no revenge attacks on any of their members down the line. Therefore, we need to piece together what we know about them bit by bit using various sources. David Grant's theauxiliaries.com website is a very good example of this, showing all the sources he used to gather all the data about the auxiliary soldiers. So who were the auxiliaries, or the auxiliary division of the Royal Irish Constabulary, Andric, to give them their official title? They were the brainchild of Winston Churchill and first mooted in the spring of 1920. They were at the time the highest paid police force in the world, earning £1 a day, that's £365 a year, a more than decent salary for the time, with decent holiday leave also thrown in. The auxiliaries were former officers of the British Army, so not from the regular rank and file or privates in the army. They were seen then as a step above. In the words of one historian, they were more accustomed to giving than to receiving orders. They were recognised by the British government as an elite strike force, ready to fight fire with fire, so to speak, against the IRA. Ironically, as it turned out, they were called a counter-terrorism force by the British administration. Ironic in that they came to be viewed by the general public in Ireland as the main terrorising threat of the War of Independence. What actually materialised was that in the eyes of the auxiliaries, the Irish people generally became their enemy. They couldn't make a clear distinction between who was their friend and who was their foe. This meant, of course, that many completely innocent civilians were on the receiving end of their heavy-handed tactics. The Kilkenny auxiliaries were often mistakenly referred to as the Tans from Woodstock. The Tans became an umbrella term to denote all the new RIC recruits generally, but Black and Tans were different in that they were mostly based in RIC barracks around the country and were typically unemployed World War I veterans that were not of the officer class but instead were once regular army privates. But of course, people weren't too bothered about which wing of the Crown Forces was what. It was the least of their worries, so to speak, so we'll forgive them that. Although the auxiliaries were nominally part of the RIC, in practice the auxiliaries acted independently. They answered only to their superior officers, safe in the knowledge that they would be protected if they made mistakes. The vast majority were either from England or Scotland, although there was some Irish people in their ranks and some were from further afield. The first set of auxiliaries arrived in Ireland in July 1920. After some brief training on the 25th of August 1920, the first company of auxiliaries, known as A Company, commandeered Woodstock House near Enstigue, County Kilkenny, so they were more or less there for the final year or so of the War of Independence. The Georgian mansion, that's Woodstock House, was designed by Francis Bindon in the 18th century and was owned by the Tye family. It was uninhabited in 1920 as the Tye family were mostly based in England, although they did holiday there on occasion. The geographic location of Woodstock House made it an ideal HQ for the auxiliaries, where they could patrol not just County Kilkenny, but also parts of Carlow, Wexford and Waterford too. From the offset, the auxiliaries did not endear themselves to the people of Kilkenny. Within 3 weeks of their arrival, some of their number were involved in an incident in Kilkenny City Mail Sorting Office. On the 11th of September 1920, several auxiliaries dressed to resemble IRA volunteers stole 11 bags of mail at gunpoint from Kilkenny Post Office Yard. They beat up Thomas Burke, the driver of the motor car who was transporting the mail. The post was brought back near Woodstock, where an unknown quantity of money was taken from the letters. The money taken was believed to be at least £700, but could have been above £1,000. The main instigator was a 30-year-old former army major named Ewan Cameron Bruce. He was from Gloucestershire in England and was secretly dismissed by the auxiliaries after the Kilkenny raid. Obviously, his superiors knew he was the leader, but this information was not released to the public at the time. There was a strange follow-up to this incident which made headlines both locally and nationally. On the 10th of October 1920, that's 1 month after the Kilkenny post office raid, Major Bruce, along with his 20-year-old nephew, another auxiliary named Alan Thomas Bruce, committed another robbery. Their target on this occasion was the home of the creamery manager in the village of Kells, County Kilkenny. John Power, the creamery manager, said in the subsequent court case that he was awoken at 2 a.m. with shouts of, "Come down and open the door immediately, we are the Black and Tans." Upon opening the door, he was ordered to put out the lights, presumably as to not identify their faces, but also to conceal Major Bruce's distinctive characteristic. He had a missing arm which he had lost in 1917 during the First World War. The keys of the safe were demanded, with the result that £75 was stolen. After the event, Bruce quickly left Ireland and returned to his home in Cheltenham. However, he was arrested there on the 21st of October and sent back to Waterford, where he faced trial. He received a 1-year prison sentence. Bruce never admitted his guilt and appealed the verdict on a number of occasions. Bruce's nephew received a 3-month prison sentence, while the two other soldiers who accompanied them were not charged as they did not enter the creamery premises. Bruce actually died 4 years later of pneumonia, while his nephew was killed in a plane crash in 1929. So it's safe to say that the auxiliaries were probably the least well-liked and most feared wing of the Crown Forces in Kilkenny. They appeared to all intents and purposes to be a law unto themselves. The major achievement was probably alienating even the most neutral and passive of Kilkenny folks, with the result that the majority of the general public began to support the independence movement as opposed to the status quo British administration. And there's a prime example of this approach with the reprisal they carried out at the Roar. However, it could have been worse, believe it or not. The overall commander of the auxiliaries, Francis Crozier, who later resigned in protest because of their antics, said he believed the Woodstock auxiliaries were probably the best behaved, as a tighter leash was put on them because of the Major Bruce incidents. Other auxiliary companies were responsible for the burning of Cork in December 1920 and the massacre of civilians at Croke Park in November 1920. Maybe we should be grateful for small mercies, but it's difficult considering how tough they were on the local Kilkenny folk. It is in this context we take a look at what occurred in the village of the Roar in the southeast of Kilkenny on Friday evening, the 10th of June 1921. As mentioned, this was not a long planned ambush or anything of the sort. It was unanticipated and spontaneously carried out by a select group from C Company, known as the Roar Company of the 5th Kilkenny IRA Battalion. The 5th IRA Battalion was HQ'd in Greignamana. That Friday afternoon, two auxiliaries had been carrying out reconnaissance work in the Roar area in civilian clothes. These were auxiliary cadets Leonard James French from Leeds and Henry Ware from Devon. After finishing their work, the two men retired to Butler's public house in the Roer village for some food and refreshments. The men were recognised as likely auxiliaries from Woodstock, and word was sent to the local IRA. Some of the leading figures of the time in the Roar included Dick O'Keefe of Cool Hill, Tom Burke and Martin Bates, John Lanigan and James Mackey. The IRA waited outside the pub for the men to leave. After the auxiliaries left Butler's that evening, they were followed by the IRA men. The two auxiliaries made their way out the village on the New Ross Road. When they discovered they were being pursued, they tried to make their escape over a ditch. There followed an exchange of gunshots from both sides. We have some testimony from the auxiliary that was with French that evening. That's 24-year-old Henry Ware. He gave his account of what happened that day. Quote, "The deceased and myself left Butler's public house. It was dark at the time. When we got about a mile and a half along the New Ross Road, we noticed that we were being followed by two men. I called the deceased's attention to the fact that we were being followed, and we both hesitated for a few minutes. The deceased was about 3 paces behind me. We decided to get over the hedge. As we approached the hedge, fire was opened from behind. Immediately, French was surrounded by about 8 men. That was the last I saw of him. I fired 4 rounds of my revolver and made my escape. I had only 2 rounds left in my revolver and 1 Mills bomb. End quote. Henry Ware went on to say that, in his opinion, French was wounded when the first shots were fired. Ware escaped across country and eventually returned to Woodstock House later that night. We know that for some reason he was fined £2 by his commanding officer. We don't know why, however. Maybe it was because the men weren't meant to go to the pub at all during their mission, exposing themselves to unnecessary danger, or perhaps he was fined because he left his companion behind. From what we can see from the IRA records available, that sometime late that evening, Friday the 10th of June 1921, it was decided to execute French. He became the first and only member of the Woodstock Auxiliaries to be killed during the War of Independence. It is likely he was wounded when captured and then executed after a brief impromptu trial held by the IRA. Unfortunately, this ending would have been the fate of many auxiliaries captured during these final months of the War of Independence. There isn't a huge amount written down about this execution from the IRA's perspective, which is not unusual. Remember, these were very ordinary people, such as farmers and shopkeepers. Executions were the last thing they wanted and the least liked part of the job. Well and good if they had a battle in an ambush, etc. But executing someone often traumatised the people that had to carry out the execution for years to come. In James Mackey's pension application, he was from Kylemore and a member of the Roar IRA company. He simply said, quote, "On the 10th of June 1921, shot an auxiliary officer, and on him I found a Webley revolver and a Mill bomb, which I took possession of." End quote. Mackey also said he had assisted in the execution of the informer William Kenny in Gregnamanna the previous August. Martin Bates, who was a flying column member from the Roar and so was a highly regarded IRA man in the area, said he was also involved in the execution of French. He said, quote, "French was a spy. I executed on the 10th of the 6th, 21. End quote. We do also have an account of French's execution by Ned McPhillips, a member of the 6th Battalion IRA, who was from close to New Ross Town, just south of the Roar. He was not present at French's execution and so would have heard the story secondhand. Nonetheless, it's probably a decent account of what happened, and in it he gives the ultimate fate of French's body. McPhillips said, quote, "Dick O'Keefe and Tom Burke and Hickey were out looking for them two auxiliaries with double-barrelled shotguns. They had tracked them during the day, and as they got frequent reports, they held them up in the dark. The lads said, 'Halt,' and the two auxiliaries pulled guns. The lads fired, but only one shot went out of the 5 barrels, and an auxiliary French was wounded. But the other auxie followed the fields and he got away. The cartridges had stuck in the barrels of the other guns. The lads executed French with his own revolver. Then they threw French into the river. Later on, there were 2 cots there with snap nets. Cots are a type of fishing boats used in the southeast of Ireland. Someone said, 'Oh,' for the net was heavy, and up came the net with French's 6'2" frame. The fellows quickly dropped the net with fright. When anyone afterwards would say, 'Oh,' Jimmy Hamilton would say, 'That's him again,' and they would drop the net. After 9 days on the far side of the river, he drifted in to Conway's Quay, and we buried him in the mud." End quote. And I should just thank Aaron O'Meinig for discerning Ernie O'Malley's handwriting to get that account there, something I had failed to do myself. I'm sure there is also other local knowledge about this event that's not written down, passed down orally through the families. So, 26-year-old auxiliary cadet Leonard French was killed in and around the 10th of June 1921, or in the earlier hours of the 11th of June 1921, most likely on the banks of the River Barrow, although the River Nore is also close by. French was born near Stoke-on-Trent in England, but French's family later moved to Leeds and then to Lancashire. He was initially a merchant mariner and during the First World War joined the Royal Air Force. He only joined the auxiliaries on the 16th of February 1921 and was transferred to Woodstock, Kilkenny on the 21st of February 1921. That's less than 4 months before he met his demise. In reprisal for French's disappearance, in the early hours of Sunday, the 12th of June 1921, the auxiliaries terrorised a number of residents of the village of the Roar. Auxiliary Cadet Ware was with the group and showed them where French and himself had been that day before. The home and public house of Timothy Butler was burned down in reprisal. His wife, Lizzie, young children, Marianne, Thomas and Martin, were given just minutes to leave their home. Martin had been celebrating his fifth birthday that weekend, so it must have been a very traumatic time for the children. Earlier that same day, Tim Butler himself was brought to Woodstock House, where he was incarcerated and badly treated by the auxiliaries for 5 days. Butler was not an active member of the IRA in the Roar, but the auxiliaries were obviously looking to blame someone for their comrades being ambushed. Because the two auxiliaries had been drinking in Butler's, they now became the scapegoats. Butler's was the main business and hub in the village, so hitting them would also be used as punishment for the locals, who by and large gave little help or no assistance to the auxiliaries. The Kilkenny People newspaper reported what occurred as follows. Quote, on Sunday night, the residence of Mr. Timothy Butler, the Roar in Steig, was visited by a number of armed and masked men who gave the occupants 5 minutes to clear out. Mrs. Butler had barely time to wrap their little children in blankets and remove them from the house when a bomb is alleged to have been thrown into the premises and there was a terrific explosion, the entire premises being soon a mass of flame. The dwelling house and out offices were also destroyed. There was no time to remove the account books, cash or any other articles of value, and all, as well as the stock in trade, were reduced to ashes. End quote. There was initially some ambiguity also within the British ranks in regards to whether French was killed outright or wounded or held hostage. His death, however, was ultimately confirmed to his family by the IRA liaison officer George Welsh on the 26th of August 1921 during the truce and 2 months after French's disappearance. Liaison officers operated during the truce period where Crown forces could request information on missing members of their forces and the IRA could request information likewise. The IRA liaison officer gave a slightly different account of what occurred to French's family. Quote, Leonard French was tried for espionage. The trial took place on the banks of the river, and before it was finished, French attempted to escape in the river and was fired on and killed. End quote. Leonard French's family, including his mother Betsy, his father James, and two brothers, received a total of £2,000 in compensation for his death. That would be roughly around €130,000 in today's money, although they had originally requested £8,000. James Henry French, Leonard's father, travelled to Thomastown Courthouse in January 1922 for the compensation hearing. That's about 6 months after his death. The award given for Leonard's death was slightly above average for a Crown Force soldier at the time. Compensation was calculated on how much he was likely to earn in civilian life had he lived. He had earned relatively a decent amount of money in the past. He was receiving £288 a year in the Mercantile Marine before the war and was paid £600 a year as a flight commander in the RAF during the First World War. Now that would be nearly quadruple the average yearly wage at the time. Although paid £365 a year plus extras in the auxiliaries, his father said he had turned down a job from a private shipping company offering him £720 a year. His parents said Leonard used to send them between £3 and £4 a week to support them and his brothers. One brother also lost his position as an architect's apprentice as he couldn't pay the fees now Leonard was dead. In the weeks that followed the destruction of their property, Tim Butler, along with his brothers, applied for £13,015 in compensation. That would roughly equate to about €750,000 in today's money. Coincidentally, the compensation hearing for Butler's property was held in Thomastown Courthouse on the same day as the compensation hearing relating to the death of Leonard French. It was the 21st of January 1922, which was of course during the truce and 6 months after the events described. The claim for the destruction of Butler's premises was brought jointly by the brothers John Thomas and Tim Butler, who were all in partnership. The total sought encompassed the destruction of the property, the stock, furniture and the projected loss in profits over the next 5 years. It also included £320 in cash notes which were burnt in the fire. That's around €19,000 in cash in today's money. Butler's was very well known at the time and supplied everything the inhabitants of the area could need. As their solicitor said, they sold everything from a toothpick to a plough, and they had always done extraordinarily fine business. The court heard the following from their legal counsel about events on that weekend in June 1921. Quote, on Friday the 10th of June, two persons, attired as civilians, turned up at the premises and had breakfast. Mrs. Butler ran a hotel as well as the licensed premises. On that evening, the same two men turned up for supper. The following morning, the 11th of June, a lorry load of auxiliaries arrived at Butler's premises and the officer in charge proceeded to question the residents as to the identity of the two strangers who had been lurking in the neighbourhood the day before. Apparently being satisfied with the information which Timothy Butler gave them, which was nothing, they went away. Tim Butler, a short time afterwards, proceeded in the direction of New Ross, taking with him £200 which he intended lodging in the bank there. Before he had proceeded far along the road, he was overtaken by the lorry load of auxiliaries and ordered to get into the lorry, and he told he could not proceed to make the lodgment. They told him he could leave the money back in the house, and having done so, he was again taken into the lorry and brought to Woodstock House, the headquarters of the auxiliaries, where he was kept for 5 days without rhymes or reason. The next thing the family had to deal with occurred at midnight. At that time, the premises were occupied by Thomas and John Butler, Timothy's wife and three children, the children of John, who was a widower, and two servant girls, Anastasia O'Rourke and Anastasia Murphy, both of whom who had claims in respect of their clothes having been destroyed in the fire. At midnight on Sunday the 12th of June 1921, a number of men, dressed to all appearances as civilians, having handkerchiefs across their faces and otherwise disguised, burst into the place and roused the entire residents out of bed. Thomas Butler was taken out of bed by the neck, and the children and Mrs. Timothy Butler were ordered to clear out within 1 minute. They barely had time to put on enough clothes for decency's sake when they were ordered into a house across the road and told to lock the door and not show a light. Within a second of their entering the house, a terrific explosion was heard, and Thomas Butler, notwithstanding the order to the contrary, had the temerity to look out and saw the premises in flames. Evidently, a high explosive had been used. In another few minutes, he saw the place in blazes. He saw two men rush away, and on going outside, he heard the noise of a motor car going away. The premises were totally destroyed, along with every article of furniture, books, clothing, etc. End quote. Tim Butler also told a hearing that the business made about £1,500 to £2,000 profits a year. The fact that all the account books were destroyed was a huge headache, as most people at this time got their supplies on tick, or in other words, on credit. He estimated there was about £2,750 worth of goods sold on tick, but he had no way of knowing for sure. It was not usually that high a figure, but due to the bouts of foot and mouth disease in the district, prices had dropped substantially and marts were not held, so there was a cash flow issue with most of the farmers in the area. He believed his customers were honourable people and would pay, but it was possible that they themselves didn't even know how much they owed. An independent accountant and then also an engineer gave figures for the loss of the business and how much it would cost to rebuild the structure. The Butler family were eventually awarded £9,250 in compensation to be levied off County Kilkenny at large. That's roughly €600,000 in today's money. Another £300 was awarded for the family's loss of clothing, Clothing was much more expensive in those days, and people kept them for a long time and often got them repaired, so they didn't have that kind of throwaway culture we have today. The butlers also hoped to get an additional £2,000 compensation from their insurance company. The two female servants, that's the Anastasias, Murphy and O'Rourke, were awarded £16 and £35 respectively for the loss of their clothing. The butlers initially re-established their business, firstly in an old shed. They then rebuilt their premises and business from scratch and eventually expanded it. Tim Butler's wife, Lizzie, who was originally from nearby Raheen Duff and whose maiden name was also Butler, did not get to enjoy their new home for very long. She passed away in November 1928, aged just 53 years, from a heart condition. That ends our look at events in the rural County Kilkenny village of Dorore. Just to thank you all again for listening, I hope you enjoyed today's podcast, and don't forget to join your local library to avail of all the brilliant free resources. Until next time, thanks.